Portfolio Construction Forum and the National Business Review present Professor Neil Ferguson, May 2016.
What I'm going to do is to, I'm going to talk about what seem to me to be the hardest questions that we can address about the world economy today. I'm going to use historical perspectives to try to answer those questions. That's essentially what I do. You could think of me as an applied historian. And by applying history rather than some macroeconomic model, I think I'm in a better position to get these questions right. Let me start with the argument that my boss has been making, or rather my former boss, because Larry Summers is no longer a president of Harvard, which he was when I was hired by Harvard. Since he didn't get the job of Fed chairman, Larry has made an argument that the world, sometimes he says the world and sometimes he says the United States, to Americans those are essentially the same thing. I have a hard time persuading them that they're not synonyms. So the argument that Larry makes is that we are, we being America stroke the world, in a situation of secular stagnation. And you can see in this chart that he and others show that if your definition of a healthy rate of growth is the same rate of growth that we had before the global financial crisis, then I kind of get that. Though my own view is that the rate of growth that we had from 2000 to 2007 was an unsustainable rate of growth based on excessive leverage, financial engineering, crazy capital flows from China to the United States. And therefore, to imagine that it could somehow have been continued is to create a false counterfactual. Still, Larry has been winning this debate. It's very notable why he has been winning it. He's been winning it because all the official projections for future growth turn out year after year to be too optimistic. And you can see here in this chart the consensus forecasts being revised downwards for 2012, 2013, 2014, and each year it's pretty much the same process, where the economists, whether it's at the Fed or the IMF or at Goldman Sachs, start with a whole rosy scenario that growth is going to be better than it was, and then, of course, they spend the year cutting the forecast. And you can see what happened in 2014. The forecast started out in 2012 that the growth rate in 2014 would be 4.5%. The actual outcome was 3.2. We're already in this same cycle, it seems. No sooner does the IMF publish its World Economic Outlook than its economists start revising down the projections ahead of the next World Economic Outlook. Given that the models used by economists are consistently this wrong, you might expect people to stop using those models. But that would be another species. This is the human race. And if you've spent all of your life studying new Keynesian models of the global macroeconomy, you're not about to scrap them. That might require new thought, something that's almost impossible for human beings over the age of 40. So on we go, revising the projections down, and the IMF kind of threw in the towel in April with its latest World Economic Outlook, because it kind of admitted that the secular stagnation hypothesis might be sort of, kind of, maybe right. And these charts tell you the story, because in these two scenarios that the IMF just published, they basically predict that real GDP, or for that matter, commodity prices, will continue in free fall for the next 5 years, unless there is substantial fiscal stimulus and structural reform. You can infer from that whatever you like. You could infer that politicians would read the IMF report and embark immediately on structural reform and fiscal stimulus, or you could draw the more logical conclusion that that blue line is our future. The IMF also, in its latest report, made it clear that it expects monetary policy to keep on being eased. I'm going to argue in a minute that the most significant thing to happen so far this year was the Fed's decision to slow the pace of rate hikes, a decision that was taken in February. But broadly speaking, that was a decision that was being anticipated by markets even before it happened. And you can see the same process, the lines being revised downwards between 2013 and 2016 for the other major Western central banks. Now, it is a characteristic feature of a view on the global economy that when it becomes the consensus view, it is almost certainly about to be proved wrong. Once people at Davos, or Davos as it should be pronounced, at the World Economic Forum start talking about secular stagnation, you should start positioning yourself for global recovery. And I'm going to tell you why I think secular stagnation is going to turn out to be wrong right now, and why in the near future it's quite likely that people will look back and say, do you remember that secular stagnation thesis? Ha! Pass the champagne. That's how we talk at Harvard. More like, pass the nasty Pinot. So what I'm going to try and suggest to you is that, as so often in world history, people are so busy looking in the rearview mirror that they don't actually see what's ahead. It's hard to spot an inflection point when you're in it. In fact, the greatest skill of any investor is to spot that inflection point as it is happening. Everybody will have spotted it by about the end of the year, and then they will all claim to have predicted it. But in fact, nobody now, with the exception of a handful of optimists, is saying that this is the inflection point. I'm telling you, this is the inflection point. I think, in fact, the end of February was the inflection point. What do I mean by the inflection point? I mean that those forces that we can trace back to 2008, which administered a massive deflationary shock to the global economy, comparable in scale to the shock of 1929-31, those forces are finally fading. It's a little bit like the inflection point that happened between 1979 and around 1982. One of my students did a very good senior thesis a few years ago. He now runs his own hedge fund. And the senior thesis was, when did markets realize that the US had turned a corner in the early 1980s? Now, we all think, oh, the moment Paul Volcker was Fed chairman, everybody started to celebrate. But no. My student's thesis showed conclusively that it took a long time for market commentators and participants to realize that monetary policy and, under Ronald Reagan, fiscal policy had fundamentally turned a corner. And he showed that it was only sometime after the economic realities had changed that people woke up. And then they all began claiming that they had predicted it. And this is what confuses the historical record. The tendency of people to engage in retrospective, self-justificatory prediction. So I'm going to argue that we're in an inflection point like that. It's the opposite inflection point. That was the end of inflation, or to be precise, the end of stagflation inflection point. Everything was different. in the 1980s from the 1970s. I think our inflection point is the end of the deflation neurosis. In fact, it's the end of non-secular stagnation. The word secular falls out. This isn't going to last for 100 years. It's going to turn out to have been an 8-year stagnation. Why do I think this? Well, partly following Gavin Davis's excellent commentary in the Financial Times. Gavin is always worth reading. Partly because he, unlike many economists, makes use of the increasingly available high-frequency real-time data that we have. Economics is undergoing a revolution in methodology that is rendering those old New Keynesian models as obsolete as steam engines. Because what is happening is that much more data are available much more frequently. And when we start to look at them, as in this chart here, which is estimating underlying activity growth annualized on a percentage change per month, but on an annualized basis. If you look at the blue parts of this chart, the parts from November of last year to now, and look at the central dark blue line, you see the inflection point. You see that the bottom was late February, and that since then, underlying economic activity has bounced. Here's some more evidence. Do it for the advanced economies and do it for the emerging markets. What do you see? You see the same pattern, not perhaps surprisingly. Let's see if this flashing light can. There you are. That's the inflection point. And there it is there. And things have been moving up pretty sharply in the emerging markets since February. US story is a little less clear because we've had a little pullback. Still, this is, I think, a striking change of direction. Again, the blue are the real-time estimates rather than the historical data, and the bands give you some kind of sense of the range of possible outcomes. For the euro area, it's pretty feeble. For China, it's for real. By the way, I've just come from 2 weeks in Beijing. I guess after 2 weeks in Beijing, pretty much anywhere would seem like home. Maybe that's why I'm reacting this way to New Zealand. The only place that didn't bounce is in fact, Japan. So you got the bounce, you got the bounce, bounce, no bounce. So Japan seems to be the place that has secular stagnation. And I want to suggest to you that that's how we should think about the secular stagnation hypothesis. It's absolutely right, but not about the United States, and not about China, and not about the world economy. It's only true of Japan. And maybe a few European countries, Italy. I think Italy is in secular stagnation. Now, if I just stop right there, you would be checking your email. Some of you already are. Just could you stop that? Because you would think to yourself, well, you know, it could go the other way next week. It could change direction tomorrow. How do I know that this is a structural break in the trend and not just a blip? I don't know. It's part of the fascination of studying history is that it's incredibly hard to anticipate the future. And I could be wrong. And if the direction changed in the US and China in the course of this month, then I would change my story. By the way, that's the intellectually responsible way to proceed. The intellectually irresponsible way to proceed is to claim that you are always right, insist that your position is consistent through the ages, and then retrospectively falsify what you said in order to make it appear that that is the case. We call this Krugman syndrome. Paul Krugman, the man who's admitted to having been wrong on only 3 occasions in the entire course of his career. Nobody's that right. It's impossible to be that right about a process too complex to model, which is what world economic history is.